So thank you. Our next speaker is Kim Perkins at the USGS, and her subject is field evaluation of preferential flow in ag soil of the Mississippi Delta.
Thanks, Mike. I'll start by acknowledging my co-authors, John Nimmo, who just talked a few minutes ago, Claire Rose and Richard Koop, who are with the survey in Pearl, Mississippi. So here is the U.S. map. Mississippi is here on the Delta. The Gulf Coast, and the upper, the northwest portion of the state is referred to as the Delta, and our study site is here pretty much in the middle of the Bogfalai Basin, and we're about 5 kilometers from the Mississippi River at this location. So this is a prolific agricultural area. They grow soybeans, cotton, corn, rice, and catfish. It's quite humid. They get 1,300, millimeters of precipitation a year. The soils are the Sharkey soil series over alluvial sand. These are very deep, poorly drained soils formed in clay alluvium, and downward flow below the root zone is considered minimal in these soils. And the issues they have in this area are extensive use of agricultural chemicals, a basic lack of understanding of flow mechanisms through the unsaturated zone, and a declining water table due to pumping. So prior to the late 1980s, they basically used surface water for irrigation, and they started having depletion of surface water, so they switched over to groundwater, and there was a pretty temporary recovery in the surface water until the water table declined from about a meter to 12 meters where it is today. So now they're sort of back in the same situation, depleting surface water and groundwater. So the questions we have are, does infiltrated water mainly go to recharge, lateral flow to streams and ditches, or both? How prevalent is preferential flow, and how has the declining water table affected flow through the unsaturated zone? So in order to answer these questions, we did a field infiltration test in November of 2007 using a 2-meter diameter infiltration ring. We ponded water for 67 hours and monitored the subsurface for water content and matrix potential. And we also used tracers, bromide, and rhodamine to look at travel times, distances, and dominant flow directions. And to sample for the tracer in the unsaturated zone, we used suction lysimeters. And after 7 months, we went back and took continuous cores and extracted the bromide from those as well. And we had piezometers in the saturated zone as well. So this is the basic layout. Here's the 2-meter diameter ring. We set up the instruments in a radial pattern, and we had one leg sort of going off to the south to get some data on the shallow lateral flow. So we've got 21 instruments down to 60 centimeters depth, 20 down to 120 centimeters depth. Thank you. And 6 down at 2.5 meters depth, and then we have 6 down to 5 meters. And the water table piezometers are these open circles that are probably really hard to see, within a meter of the pond, and then we have one down here that's about 15 meters away. And this is just an overview of the site. One thing to notice is the drainage ditch here, which these you see these on the side of all of the on the margins of all of the agricultural fields, probably all over the south, to transport surface water runoff away. So here are some of the hydraulic results. The infiltration rate remained pretty remarkably constant after the first 20 minutes at about 6 × 10⁻⁴ centimeters per second. We saw fast vertical flow with many of the probes in the upper meter or so responding in less than an hour. This graph is showing water content versus time from the start of infiltration. And a lot of these jumped up quite quickly with sort of subtle changes in water content because the water contents were pretty high to begin with. And we saw extensive shallow lateral movement of water. We even saw away from the pond water coming up through surface cracks. As far as the tracer detections, within a month, we detected tracer at all of the samplers down to 60 centimeters depth, about 70% of the samplers down to 120 centimeters depth had detections. We had no detections at that point at the 2.5 meter lysimeters, but we did have a detection at 5 meters, and that one was 2 meters away from the pond. And then within 2 months, we had detections at every single instrument except for the one that's 12 meters away from the pond toward the ditch. And these are the aquifer bromide detections. So here's concentration versus time. There is background bromide in the system. So the only detections we considered real were those that were three standard deviations above the background value. So it looks like within, this is after about 10 weeks, we have a detection in the piezometer nearest to the pond. And then within 5 months, we have detections at all the piezometers. So we want to look at water velocity as evidence for preferential flow. We had a relatively high infiltration rate, higher than you'd expect based on texture. We had these fast detections at 5 meters prior to 2 meters. And we had highly variable velocities. And this graph here is showing velocity in centimeters per second versus depth. And I want to look at this in the context of the model that John talked about a few minutes ago, the source responsive model. So here you've got, this is that 13 meters per day that John found in his study, and then that one order of magnitude spread. And here you can see the dots are our TDR probe detections, and the lines are the lysimeter detections where we had discrete sampling events. So the actual velocity is somewhere within that range. So you can see these data fall pretty much within what the studies that John explored in his work. And here we have the aquifer detections. This red triangle is the that first detection at 10 weeks, and this orange one is the 5 month detections. And then this blue triangle, if we take John's source responsive flow model and assume that the flow was driven partly by the ponded infiltration and partly by subsequent precipitation events, that's the prediction that you get. Okay, so we went back in June of 2008 and collected core samples so we could determine the extent of tracer because we had detections at all of our subsurface probes. Again, we did a radial pattern, but we went out further. We had one core all the way to the water table beneath the pond. These two went down to 8 meters. We had a bunch of cores, 10 down to 5 meters. And then we did this radial pattern, of course, to 1 meter so we could get a handle on the shallow lateral extent. And we took that data and did a bromide mass balance. Excuse me. And the data were dense enough in the upper meter that we could actually integrate the data from these contour plots. And we found that there's 2.2 kilograms of bromide residing in that upper meter. And these are the data from deeper down. The sampling domain was bounded by zero values. So when you integrate this data, you get 2.3 kilograms of bromide residing from 1 to 5 meters. So that leaves 43% of the mass unaccounted for that we want to interpret as an indication of the relative amount of preferential flow. And these outer contours, you'll notice, are dashed. Even if these are extended out, the concentrations are so low they add almost nothing to the total mass. Okay, so now we come to the conceptual model of subsurface flow, what we think was going on before they started pumping groundwater. We know that the shallow lateral component is important, and water likely reached the surface of the water table pretty quickly and likely flowed in the dominant groundwater flow direction, and a lot of this water ended up in these ditches and streams that are up to a few meters deep. And here is the conceptual model of subsurface flow today. There's probably still quite a bit of shallow lateral flow through the top meter or so, half meter to a meter. But then now you've got this deeper component of flow. And when the water reaches this silty clay alluvial sand boundary, we think that it's moving through preferential flow paths like fingers or something else, because we know that the tracer reached the water table, but we were unable to detect it with our point measurements within that alluvial sand, so it must be moving within discrete pathways. So to conclude, preferential flow is prevalent, indicated by those early detections below the pond. We had very extensive shallow lateral flow, and we think the transition from the soil to the alluvial sand may lead to fingered flow, and the mass balance proved useful in inferring the preferential flow fraction. So it looks like the lowering of the water table may actually increase deep transport and storage of chemicals that otherwise would have ended up in surface water. Thanks.
Any questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go back to the previous figure. What do you think the reason for the preferential flow at that depth was?
Just the boundary between the soil material and the sand. I mean, people have shown in column experiments that, that water tends to finger into the... Yeah, difference in texture. Yeah, and because the ring was so large, it was pretty close to that infiltration rate that I showed.
Oh, go ahead. Well, bromide is generally not recovered well. You always have less bromide.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to see what will happen if you try to recover bromide, you just move.
Try to recover.
Yeah, say you know about the bromide.
Right, we put in 8 kilograms.
And then the track will go. Usually it's never 100%.
But 43% missing seems significant to me. Mike?
I'm wondering whether whether on this and some of the other talks, whether the kinematics or pressure waves play any role in this really rapid movement of water within these large pores, and maybe you're seeing some of this in that case. And there was some work done in the late 90s on kinematics and unsaturated material, and that it really causes very, very rapid movement and very quick, quick rises of water tables and things like that, and saprolites and things like that.
Okay.
I don't know if that's something that you considered or looked at all.
No, we haven't. I don't know, John, have you thought much about? I mean, people do represent preferential flow using kinematic waves.
Right.
Yeah, we haven't done the analysis, but
it certainly could, yeah.
It.